This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Thank you for being here this afternoon. Well, as of early afternoon yesterday, we went to the extreme fire danger level in the area. Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association in. And not only did we do that, but it looks like we had a few thunderstorms overnight that have resulted in a few fires.
Yeah, we did. Yesterday afternoon, the National Weather Service out of Medford called and informed us that there was a slight possibility to see some lightning in our area. It was more forecasted to stay in Northern California and the east side of the Cascades, but they couldn't fully rule out the possibility up here in lo and behold, overnight we had a couple cells move across the eastern portion of our district where we butt up against the Umpqua National Forest. And we had a handful of strikes, lightning strikes, between the Tiller and Drew area all the way up past Glide, right there along the border with us in the Umpqua. So we've been engaged since early this morning looking for new fire starts and trying to take care of those quickly.
So was this kind of early this morning, late last night, or a mix of both?
Yeah, I don't have the exact time frame. It was, I believe it was after midnight when these cells came through. Doesn't sound like we got a whole lot of moisture out of these, maybe a little bit of moisture, but overall these were fairly dry storms, it sounds like.
So when this kind of thing takes place, do you have people working around the clock at night watching these cameras and stuff?
Yeah, it just kind of depends on the situation. You know, when we get the lightning that rolls in late in the evening before everybody's gone, we'll hold people over. You know, in those instances like we saw here where it happened, you know, very, very early in the morning, you know, depending on, you know, what we can see, we start calling people in. You know, obviously we can't fly our aviation resources till it gets daylight, but we can man the cameras and send people out if we can.
And talk about those cameras. We have had a shift, just like a lot of other things, technology-wise versus what was done for decades.
Yeah, so years ago, I believe it was about 2006, we started looking into alternatives to lookouts just because a lot of our lookouts were aging, needed a lot of repairs, and we found a fire detection camera system. By 2011, we fully converted over, and actually we've improved the coverage on our district since we went to the cameras because we've added some sites that we didn't have before. And then basically how it works is it's taking pictures and sending those pictures back to our office. From there, the computer will compare previous images for differences, you know, to spot fires. However, if you have some clouds that move by or some dust, it'll flag those areas. So it still takes the human eye to, you know, fully, you know, determine whether it's a fire or a cloud of dust or something like that. But we can staff a lot more cameras than we can lookouts with the same or less amount of people.
And so this sounds like a very high-tech version of, I mean, some people have surveillance cameras for their business or home or whatever, but obviously you've got to be able to see a lot more.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the nice thing about these cameras, we can take control of them here in the office and pan, tilt, zoom, apply some filters to them to help detect those smokes. The other nice thing is when we're out in the field, we can actually, if we have cell service, log in either through a tablet or a smartphone, and we can't take control of them out there, but we can see what they're looking at so we can get a better idea. You know, is it behind the ridge? Is it in front of the ridge, on top of the ridge? What's the column doing? So we can gain a lot of intel just by, you know, looking off our phone at the cameras as well.
So it sounds like it really speeds things up for folks when you've got a fire going.
It really does. And, you know, the other thing about these cameras, you know, we were kind of the first ones here in the state to pioneer this system. It spread beyond us, you know, out of our office. We monitor 30 fire detection cameras. 13 of those are on us, DFPA, and the others are stretched out basically from Brookings all the way up to Sweet Home. And then, you know, there's several other fire detection centers across the state that utilize the same system. And in total, there's about 80 cameras on that network, and it looks like that'll be expanding in the coming years with additional funding coming towards fire detection.
So let's talk about the fires that we do have right now. Do you have anything big, or are these smaller at this point?
So far, all the fires that we know of are fairly small. We've got a couple up in the North Umpqua drainage, and then a couple down in the Tiller country. So up the North Umpqua, we've got a fire really close to the Susan Creek boat ramp, which is located between the river and the highway there, about a half acre. That fire has been lying in as a mop-up. We've got another fire that was reported up off of Canton Creek. That's a single tree that's burning, and crews are working their way into that one as we speak. Another one up in that country off of Canton Creek is called the Salmon Creek Fire. Some industrial landowners that were working in the area located this fire and reported it to us. We don't have a size on that one at the time. It's in a pretty remote area, and we're trying to get some crews hiked into that one. And let's see, we also have one, the High Power Fire, that's on the Umpqua National Forest, but it's about a half mile from private lands that we protect. So we used our helicopter to keep that fire in check while they've been the ground resources of working their way into that. Moving down south into the Tiller-Drew country, we had a fire on Cowbell Mountain, which was a Cowbell fire. About a tenth of an acre, that one's been lined and mopped up, so things are looking good there. And then there was a fire on Section Creek on the Umpqua National Forest. That was, again, about a half mile from DFPA protected private lands. So we sent a crew into that one, and the reports back is it's lined and in mop-up stage from crews with the Umpqua. So things are looking good there as well.
So it sounds like you have to cover a lot of ground, I suppose, with the plane and looking at the cameras very quickly to be able to assess where you need to put people or if you do.
Yeah, exactly. So, right off the bat, once we're able to fly, we get that aircraft up. And one of the tools we have is a lightning detection system. So as those strikes are happening, there are sensors, around the state and the country that get a fairly close idea of where those lightning strikes are taking place, at least a starting point for us, or typically within a mile or two accuracy. And, from there, at least we have an idea to start looking, listen the aviation resources up, as long as they have good visibility, that there's not too much cloud cover. And then, from there, it's all hands on deck and detection center. And then with the ground resources, not only from DFPA, but we see all of our industrial partners step up and make patrols out through their blocks of land, and the BLM and the Forest Service and everybody else. So it's really an all hands on deck effort when this happens.
So in talking with the Weather Service, is there potential for more thunderstorms as the week goes on and the temperatures warm up?
So listening to the weather briefing this morning, it sounded like there was a slight chance through this afternoon for additional lightning for our area. However, they weren't overly confident in that developing. It sounds like the monsoonal moisture that moved in to our area overnight is quickly moving off to the east, which will diminish the chances of lightning in our area. Probably see some more lightning in the eastern part of the state, but for us, it sounds like we're just going to warm up and dry out from here. So it's, with the lightning fires we've had, it's really important that we get on these quickly, get these mopped up and taken care of so they don't become an issue in a couple days when it does warm up.
And I also see that we don't have the 20 mile an hour winds that we've had sometimes lately.
Yeah, winds, one of that wild card factor that can really influence a fire spread. So when you get those strong gusty winds, things can go sideways quickly on you. So as long as those winds stay off, things should be going pretty good for us.
But you have 3 days that are going to be right at or near 100 degrees. That's got to be a concern.
It is. Like I said before, we want to get on these quickly. We've got a lot of resources working on these, both aviation and ground resources working to get stuff buttoned up before this weather shifts back to above normal temperatures and low humidity.
All right, going to take a break. We'll talk more about fire danger and related topics. Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association. They interview a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson coming at 1. KQEN Local Talk at 4. True Wealth Radio with David Littlejohn. That's ahead. On tomorrow's program, we'll check in with the Mercy Foundation, talk about some of their programs with Miriam Pearson and Trina Gwaltney on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County. Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association. We've been talking about the thunder and now some small fires in the area. But let's go back to how this got started. The fire danger level yesterday going to extreme on all of the DFPA lands, which is 1.6 million acres. That's a big area.
It is a big area. That includes the private lands, county lands, state lands, the ONC lands that are managed by the BLM, and then some lands that are held in trust for the Cow Creek Tribe through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So it's a pretty big area that we protect, and takes a lot of resources to do that.
So I honestly expected maybe that we were going to get to extreme a few days ago, but then kind of conditions backed off a little bit.
Yeah, we've been tracking the conditions for quite a while, you know, obviously all summer long, but there's a couple different ones that we watch closely for the fire danger and the restrictions, and that's what we call the energy release component, our 1,000-hour fuel moistures, and then an ignition component. So that ERC, the energy release component, is really the resistance control, is how hard is that fire going to be to put out. So as that number climbs, the harder it's going to take more resources to put a fire out. The next one we have is that 1,000-hour fuel moisture. You know, that's the measurement of those 3 to 8 inch diameter dead woody materials. So that, you know, those numbers, as they continue to drop, again, fires are going to be harder to put out and spread quicker. And then our ignition component's the other one, and that's the probability of a fire starting. So those are the three things that we really watch. And all of those have been tracking well above where they should be since the springtime. So, you know, right now we're seeing conditions that are still, you know, several weeks to a month ahead of where they should be, which is kind of the trend we've seen for a while now. We did have a little bit of a cool down here, you know, last week or so, which kind of flatline those indices a little bit, so they weren't climbing anymore, which was really what let us hold off on moving to extreme a little bit longer. You know, we understand when we move to extreme or change the industrial fire precaution levels that it has a big impact, not only on the public, but industrial operators and people trying to make a living. So we're very mindful of not trying to put those in too early, but still being early enough that we don't have fires that occur.
So once you run through some of the things as far as the public use restrictions and things that are prohibited, that kind of thing.
So for the public use restrictions, a lot of them are the same as what we've saw all summer. So smoking is still prohibited in wildland areas. Open fires, so campfires, warming fires, cooking fires, stuff like that, are restricted to designated campgrounds. Propane fire pits or propane cook stoves are allowed elsewhere. Electrical fence controllers have to be used by the manufacturer's instructions and be certified by Department of Consumer and Business Services. Motor vehicles have to stay on improved roads that are free of flammable vegetation. They also need to have fire tools and water with them. So we require an axe and a shovel in each vehicle and either a gallon of water or a 2.5 pound or larger fire extinguisher. The next couple set of restrictions change a little bit based on the fire danger. So now that we're in extreme, these activities are cut off. So that's going to be the use of power saws for non-industrial purposes, the cutting, grinding, or welding of metal for non-industrial purposes, the cutting, trimming, or mowing of dried or cured grass, and then any other power-driven machinery that's not specifically mentioned but used for a non-industrial improvement or development on private property is prohibited right now. So we get a lot of questions about, you know, a couple of those. The mowing of dried grass comes up a lot. So the one exception there is the use of battery or electric string trimmers is not restricted. Gas-powered weed eaters are, because of the internal combustion motor there. So if there is something you have to clean up real quick, a battery or electric string trimmer is the way to go. The battery or electric lawn mowers with the metal blades are still restricted, though, because obviously a rock strike could start a fire. And then from there, the other big questions we get is that power-driven machinery one that's not listed in the restrictions. So that's going to cover things like excavators or, you know, post-hole augers or, you know, ditch diggers, things like that. So a lot of that kind of stuff is restricted during extreme fire danger and not allowed.
And even this morning, in the midst of all of this, I think once before 7 and once so after 9, I heard things come across the scanner about somebody was mowing a dry field somewhere and somebody else had some kind of machinery going that sounds like the category you just mentioned, even in the midst of this.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it makes it hard in a situation like we have today to get out to all of those with our staff just because we're tied up with the lightning fires from last night. But that's where our partnerships with the rural fire departments really come into play. You know, they've got our back in these situations and can run out and inform the landowners and the operators of what those restrictions are and make sure that they get shut down.
And how successful are you at that in terms of how receptive are people?
You know, you get the whole mix of things. You know, you got some people who don't know, and you got other people who don't care. You know, it's kind of unfortunately the society we live in now today. Really, we're there for the educational component of it. We want to make sure that, you know, we're letting the public know what the restrictions are. You know, from there, you know, trying to engineer something to, you know, change the pattern. So that's why we have the restrictions and we put the signage up and everything else. And then if it comes down to it, we have the option for enforcement. And, you know, once we get into those extreme categories, we pretty much go to that enforcement side of things because these restrictions have been in place for quite a while now. And, you know, we're really to the peak of when things could go bad quickly.
So at that point, I mean, you can write somebody a ticket for that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, those citations can be issued. You know, they range from, you know, $100 to $1,000, basically, depending on, you know, what the act is. And then the other factors that come into play is, you know, if, you know, they've had previous citations in the past or things like that. So, again, we work very closely, you know, not only with our forest officers, but with the sheriff's office and the LEOs, the law enforcement officers from the BLM to make sure that, you know, the fire restrictions are being followed.
So looking ahead here, the rest of the week with the very hot conditions, and I haven't really looked beyond that, but it doesn't seem like we have much of a reprieve in the near future.
No, not really. You know, looking at the 10-day forecast I saw, you know, going to have a couple pretty hot days here, and then things may cool off again back closer to somewhat normal temperatures, you know, upper 80s, low 90s. You know, looking out beyond there, you know, the forecast right now is still calling for above normal temperatures for the foreseeable future. Not a really a great indication on precipitation, but again, like we've mentioned many times before, is we typically don't get a lot of precipitation throughout Douglas County in the summer months unless it's associated with a thunderstorm. So we kind of have to wait and see what develops there, but, you know, at least for the foreseeable future, we're still looking like we're going to see those above normal temperatures.
Well, and it's not all that uncommon to go for 60 to 80 days without really any rain at all.
Yeah, you know, it seems like, you know, that June, early June time frame, we'll get a shower or two. But once you get past that, you know, middle to end of June, July, August, and the early part of September are typically pretty dry. So, you know, it's very common. And, you know, the longer that dry spell goes on, you know, our fuels are continuing to dry out and just become more receptive to new fire starts.
Well, as we go through all of this, if people want to find out more information, make sure they are up to date on restrictions and all of that, where do you point them?
So our website has all the restrictions in place. We have the proclamation in addition to a color-coded chart that shows the restrictions based on the fire danger. It's also posted on our social media accounts and our information line, which can be called 24/7. 541-672-0379.
Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You- You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.